This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, and welcome to the New Books Network Jewish Studies Channel. I am your host, Dror Arusi, Executive Director of Unity Through Diversity Institute, where we explore the future of our heritage. Please see our activities on unitytdiversity.com. That's unity, the letter T, diversity.com. Today, we're really delighted to welcome Dr. Chiara Renzo. She teaches migration and media at the University of Florence and is currently project leader of Tracing Roots and Memories, Entangled Jewish Experiences Across the Mediterranean at CDEC Foundation in Milan. Her research deals with different aspects of Jewish migrations from the Holocaust to the decolonization. We will be speaking with her about her book, Jewish Displaced Persons in Italy, 1943 to 1951, Politics, Rehabilitation, Identity, published by Routledge Press in August 2023. Welcome, Dr. Renzo, and thank you for joining us here today. Why don't you start? I know I just gave a whole background, but give us a little bit about yourself and your areas of research, please.
Yeah, sure. I teach at the University of Florence, Migration and Media, which is a course for media studies students. And I'm now working with the Foundation CEDEC, Fondazione CEDEC in Italian. And I'm currently running this project about migrations, Jewish migration from North Africa and the Middle East to Italy in the decolonization period. Thank you, first of all. Sorry, I forgot to tell you that I'm very pleased to be here with you, and thank you for inviting me and giving me the opportunity to talk about my book.
Well, thank you for being here. And actually, there'll be some interesting follow-ups after this as well, because your new area of research is also interesting. But how did you start writing about the Holocaust era in general? And Italy obviously is close to your heart, but give us a little bit why you decided to talk about Italy as well.
Sure. My interest in the history of Jewish displaced persons in Italy began when I was an MA student at Ca' Foscari University in Venice at the Department of Asian and North African Studies. I was attending a course on the history of Mandate Palestine, and I find out my personal connection with the story of the Holocaust survivors in transit Italy on their way to Palestine. So during one of these classes, I learned about the Aliyah Bet, which in Hebrew stands for the legal immigration to Palestine. I learned about the Mossad, the Aliyah Bet, which was the secret branch of the Jewish agency in charge of organizing the ships and the departures of the Holocaust survivors. And I also learned about the crucial role of Italy as a way station to Palestine right after World War II. So I understood that Italy was more than just a way station, because the Holocaust survivors lived sometimes for a few days, sometimes for months or even for years in dozens of refugee camps located all over the country. And the area where I grew up hosted some of the major refugee camps for Jewish refugees. The region where I grew up is Puglia. And for those who are not familiar with Italian geography, if we imagine Italy as a boot, the place where I grew up is the southern edge of the hill. And in this area, which is now very popular as a summer holiday destination, there was four refugee camps for Jewish refugees. So while the story of the Aliyah Bet from Italy was already known at the time when I started this research 10 years ago, especially thanks to the study of an Italian historian, Mario Toscano, the Jews' experience as refugees in Italy was quite neglected. So for my MA thesis, I began to search in the archives and I found a great variety of sources in different languages. And I decided to expand and transform my MA research into a PhD proposal, which was accepted by the University of Florence and the University of Siena. So the book is essentially the result of my PhD project, which is based on a vast archival documentation. And this allowed me to investigate this topic from different perspectives, the perspective of the British Army, the perspective of the Italian post-fascist government, and the perspective of the Jewish agency, and of course also the perspective of the Jewish organization and the refugees themselves. And please let me say that I was able to spend a long research period in Israel and travel in the UK, in France, in the US, and also in Australia, thanks to the support of the Claims Conference, Al Kagan Fellowship, the Rothschild Foundation, Hanadiv Europe, Yad Vashem, and also the European Holocaust Research Infrastructure, which support me during my PhD and also during my postdoc.
Well, thank you. It sounds wonderful, actually, just the amount that you were able to cover. Quick question. You said the papers were in many languages. Which languages?
A lot. First of all, the languages of the refugees, which unfortunately I don't cover, which was mainly Yiddish, and the many languages that they spoke, of course, German, Polish. If we talk about the Italian camps, mainly Polish and German, but also other languages like Croatian. There were a lot of sources in Hebrew because we had representative of the Jewish agency and also the Jewish soldiers who were who played a major role among the Jewish refugees in Italy. There are sources in English because we have the UN organization and the Jewish organization, the American organization, such as the Joint. And we also have Italian sources, because also the Italian government and the Italian authorities talk about the situation of the refugees. So these are more or less all the languages. Yeah.
Quite a bit. Yeah. So let's try to give this a little bit of context, because I think usually when we think of Italy and World War II, our mind goes to Mussolini. So if you can give us a little bit of a context, how we became from Mussolini to a way station for Jews to Palestine.
Mm-hmm. And this was a crucial point for me in the book. One of the scope of my book is to link the Jewish experience of displacement to the fascist period and analyze how fascist Italy play a role in this. So we are used to frame the history of the Jewish refugees in Italy, but in general in Europe, between the end of the war in 1945 and the birth of the State of Israel in 1948. And also when we think about refugees, we think that after the end of the war, Italy was invaded by a mass of survivors of Nazi concentration camps whose only wish was to reach Palestine as soon as possible. But of course, the situation was more complicated and articulated than this. So we can say that it's true that thousands of Jewish refugees arrived in Italy starting from 1945. But when they arrived in Italy, a core of Jewish refugees was already there. And these were those Jews who arrived in Italy already in the 30s, up to the first years of the war, mostly with the final goal to wait for their turn to embark for an overseas destination or to, in order to escape Europe, but found themselves stuck when Italy entered the war and interned them. Starting from 1940, Italy start to intern foreign Jews, either in concentration camps or what it's called in Italian internamento libero, which is the forced residency in a rented private house or in a boarding house in a location assigned by the Italian Ministry of the Interior. And usually they were in small and remote area of Italy, villages that were far from military strategic places. So in the framework of the war, Italy classified non-Italian Jews as enemy aliens, and their internment was part of a series of preventive measures that the fascist government adopted to control and isolate Jews, but also a wide range of civilians, which were considered political opponents or potential political opponents. So to give you some numbers, according to the Red Cross, there were around 6,000 Jews interned in Italy in 1943. And we can say that in these places, in this site of internment, conditions were different from place to place, but they range from bearable to harsh. When the Allied army landed in continental Italy from North Africa to Sicily during summer 1943, Ferramonti was the first fascist camp liberated by the Allies. And in this fascist camp, the Allies found around 2,000 Jews. And again, if we think about Italy as a boot, this camp was located in the top in a region which was called which is called Calabria. And in September 1943, the Allies transformed this camp, the Ferramonti concentration camp, into the first refugee camp. The former internees of Ferramonti became the first core of Jewish refugees in Italy, and they are known as the old refugees. So my book situates the origin of the Jewish refugees problem in post-war Italy in relation to Italy fascist politics, and look at Jewish refugees, first of all, as a legacy of the fascist period.
So you told us that the refugees have been coming, and they started even before, around 1940, even before. And you mentioned that they came from Poland. Who are these refugees in general?
The refugees were very different. Usually we think about refugees as a mass of homeless people en route to Palestine, but not all of them, first of all, opted for Aliyah. Not all of them were Zionists or Zionists in the same way. They also have different origins and different wartime experience. As I said just before, the first group of refugees that the Allied army found already in Italy were the former internees of the fascist concentration camps, mainly German and Austrian Jews, but also Czechs and Slovenians and Croatian. Quite often they were families with children. And this group was called by the archival sources, mainly from the archival sources produced by the Jewish soldiers, as old refugees. After the war, Italy became a temporary home for thousands of Jewish refugees. An average of around 20,000 people were assisted in Italy every year from 1945 to 1948. And they were mostly Polish Jews, young and very often lonely people, both survivors of concentration camps and other wartime experiences. And from oral sources, we know that some of them never tried to go back home because they were aware of their loss. Others tried to go back and wait for family members or friends, but later stepped back to the refugee camps. And quite often, we know that they join group of survivors with the help of Zionist activists, or also, of course, the Jewish Brigade, who brought them to the border with Italy and helped them enter the country, mostly illegally. This group was known as the new refugees, and of course, this term is used by the Jewish soldiers to call them. Otherwise, the refugees themselves used the biblical formula Sherita Pleta, which was adopted first by the Jews in Dachau to refer to themselves as those who would hopefully survive, and update, and was later updated by the Jews in refugee camps in order to refer both to themselves as both the surviving remnant and the saved remnant. And in the immediate post-war period, this term, Sherita Pleta, was enlarged to refer to a collective identity of those who survived the Holocaust and were striving to rebuild their lives, possibly in Palestine or later Israel. And I can say that for sure, Italy didn't have the same number of refugees as Germany, but from 1945 to 1948, the Jewish refugees in Italy were the main group, the largest group of non-Italian refugees or foreign refugees in the country.
And there were also internal refugees as well, right? From northern Italy, they had some refugees.
Yeah, at this time, Italy was dealing with Jewish refugees, mainly some of them were former internees, some of them were coming from Eastern Europe, but there were a lot of refugees, like Italian, coming back from their deportation experience, which are considered internal refugees, or Italians coming back from Italy's former colonies. Italy lost her colonies just after the war with the Paris Peace Treaty of 1947. So many Italian were called internal refugees or repatriates. And there were a lot of people transiting through Italy in order to reach their former homes. So there was a lot of traffic.
And then, so you talked about 1945 to 1948. And then in your book, you mention that 1948 is a different group of refugees. So it kind of transitioned. What happened in 1948? Well, we know what happened in 1948, but what was the transition of refugees?
Yeah, as you can imagine, the number of Jewish refugees in Italy, as refugees all over Europe, decreased with the establishment of the State of Israel in 1948. But another smaller and unexpected wave of refugees arrived in Italy from the southern shore of the Mediterranean, from North Africa, we can say in general, but especially from Libya, which was a colony that Italy just lost with the Paris Peace Treaty of 1947. And North African Jews were reaching Italy to go to Israel more quickly, as refugees from Europe were given priority by the Jewish agency in making Aliyah, and also in order to receive international assistance in their resettlement. And among these refugees, most of them were Libyan Jews. Almost all of them were Libyan Jews. And among the Libyan Jews, there were also many unaccompanied minors, who tried to arrive in Italy and get the assistance of both the Zionist movements, who opened a lot of children homes in Italy, and also the assistance of the United Nations, the agency, the refugee agency of the United Nations, who were helping or were assisting the refugees, those who were recognized as refugees in the resettlement. So the motivation pushing Libyan Jews and other Jews from North Africa to leave their country for the refugee camps in Italy was the result of a combination of factors, which include, of course, the war in North Africa, the implementation of the Russian law and the Holocaust, and of course the consequences of the deportation, which dramatically changed the status of the Jews in North Africa and the Middle East. So we can say that Libyan Jews represent an interesting case study in the framework of the humanitarian regime of that time, since from the sources I have analyzed, I can see that it was very difficult for them, for the Libyan Jews, to be recognized as victims of the war or victims of racial policies. First of all, because they became refugees in a later stage, and second, because the refugee regime of that time was Eurocentric and did not consider the outcomes of the war and the Holocaust outside of Europe. So it's interesting also to see how the problem of the refugees did not disappear in 1948 with the birth of the State of Israel, also because not all of them wanted to migrate to Israel. So there was a little group of refugees who continued to stay in Italy until the early 50s.
And part of the issue of Italy being a way station is that the British gave a quota on those that were allowed to come to Palestine before 1948, before it became its own state. And I found very interesting your interplay in your book, that your analysis of Italy's willingness to overlook the illegal immigration to British Palestine and how politically it played out. Can you just, people have to read the book to get the full picture of it, but can you give us a little bit of a taste of it?
Yeah, actually, this is the most known part of the story, the Aliyah Bet from Italy. And Italian historiography demonstrated that the attitude of the Italian government in dealing with the Jewish refugees and letting them illegally embark for Palestine from Italy was a sort of attempt to quickly atone for its fascist past without really rethinking its racial past and its consequence, as well as its involvement in the Holocaust. But the book also shows how Italy dealt with the refugees when it regained sovereignty at the end of the British occupation in 1947. And at that point, Italy's responsibility towards the Jewish DPs was no longer exclusively limited to the control of their illegal entries or departure. And the UN agency insisted that the Italian government take charge of the country's foreign refugees. So during this period, Italy repeatedly refused either to assume moral responsibility or to make a significant contribution to help and to assist the refugees. But I must say that Italy was not only a way station for the Jews, was even more for them. In this book, I shed light on the fact that Italy was more than a waiting room to go to Palestine. This is what I learned from the Jewish DP's personal story, because the community that they were able to build in Italy make me think that we should rethink their displacement as a framework of social interaction, of political discussion, of humanitarian practices, of life-changing decision, of cultural production. The Jewish refugees brought in the refugee camps their knowledge, their memory, their past, their hopes for the future, their pain, their fears, and their strength to rebuild again their lives. And their effort to start their new life again began exactly in the refugee camps, not right after their resettlement in Israel or elsewhere. So I think this is also important to say, to shed light on their active participation in camp life.
Yeah, I thought it was fascinating to see all the different types of camp life as well. And it will be important, you mentioned a little bit about the joint and different organizations that came in, but then
in the book, you also talk about the Agudat Israel and the Shomer HaTzair. And so there was also somewhat of a religious and political infrastructure that was being built there.
Yeah. Jewish refugees were surrounded by a network of humanitarian and political organizations whose goal and welfare policies sometimes converge, sometimes diverge. There were different types of organizations dealing with them. So in 1943, the first aid programs comes from the Jewish soldiers from Palestine enrolled in the Allied Army. They start to provide, first of all, food and clothes, but they also try together to put together all the Jewish refugees in Italy in the same camps, to organize Jewish lives within the camps, and plan also programs to prepare the Jewish DPs for Aliyah. The Jewish soldiers were able to organize classes for children to teach them Hebrew and more in general to allow them going back to school. They also organized group in Aksharot, which were sort of training center where the Jewish DPs prepare themselves for their future life in kibbutz. And at the end of the war, the other agencies arrived in Italy, especially the agencies of the United Nations start their mission in Europe. First of all, the United Nations Relief and Rehabilitation Administration, which is also known as UNRWA. And the
That gets confusing. I'm just making sure people know it's not UNRWA, UNWRA, it's UNRRA. Just want to clarify that.
Yeah, thank you. And this was the first agency of the United Nations which operate to help the refugees until 1947. And it was replaced by another agency, which is the International Refugee Organization, also known as the IRO, which was active until 1951, when it was replaced by what is known today as the United Nations High Commission on Refugees. So the UN agency coordinated also the work of the Jewish humanitarian organization, among whom was the American Jewish Joint Distribution Committee, also known as the Joint. The Joint really made the difference for the Jewish DPs in Italy, supporting them in their basic needs, but also in the Aksharot, in educational and political and cultural activities. Other important actors were the representative of the political movements from the Shuv, in Hebrew, the Shlichim, and they were coordinated by an institution which was called Merkaz Echalutz, which was in charge of supervising this training center, in Hebrew, Aksharot. Each one was affiliated with a specific party or Zionist movement. So this is why in Italy we have representatives and also Aksharot affiliated to the Shomer HaTzair or affiliated to Agudat Israel or to Mizrahi. And this political diversity also reflects the diversity of the Jewish DP's attachment to Zionism.
And I want to make sure everybody understands we're talking about almost anti-religious all the way to religious, ultra-Orthodox, and everywhere in between.
Yeah.
So just to make sure, because not everybody's familiar with those terms. And then one of the things that I was looking for was you talk about the international community's relationship with the refugees and the Italian government. What about the Italian Jewish relationship mm-hmm. with those refugees?
Yeah. Italian Jews were directly involved in assisting the refugees already in the 30s when the first refugees start to arrive in Italy. The Italian Jewish communities already in the 30s established a committee in charge of providing assistance to those people, mainly family who ended up in Italy with the final goal of getting a visa or buying a ship ticket for an overseas destination. In that phase, Italian Jews, through a net of local committees, provided food, clothes, and helped the refugees in bureaucratic procedures with the Italian authorities. Especially, they were active in the main cities, such as Rome or Milan, or in port cities, such as Trieste or Genoa. In this effort, they they could count on the financial support of the American Jewish organization, such as the Joint or the Hayas. And they continue to help the refugees, actually the non-Italian Jews in turn, so the internees, sending them food and trying to get visa or to buy ship ticket to allow them to leave the country. And in 1943, the Italian Jewish institution were forced to close their committees, as all their institutions, and providing assistance was almost impossible. But soon after the arrival of the Allies, the few Italian Jews who were in liberated regions, so in the southern part of Italy, start to organize again Italian Jewish life and Jewish institution, including this aid committee, which now include also Italian Jews in its program. And even if Italian Jews' financial resources were quite limited, even after the war, they play an important mediator role between the Italian authorities and the Jewish organization, and also between the Italian authorities and the Jewish refugees themselves.
Thank you. And then I always try to pick out at least one strong woman. So you mentioned Ada Sereni, right? I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Perfect.
So tell us a little bit about her, just we need to highlight.
Yeah. Ada Sereni was among the Italian Jews who stand out for playing a leading role in post-war Italy, especially in the Mossad Lealia Bet. She was born in Rome to a prominent Italian Jewish family at the beginning of the last century. And she was among the first Italian Jews who made Aliyah in the 20s, in the 1920s. She migrated to Palestine with her husband, Enzo Sereni. And both of them were among the founders of Kibbutz Givat Venner. Much of her life was spent in the shadow of the heroic figure of her husband, who died as one of the Jews from the Shuv who parachuted into German-occupied Europe during World War II. However, she was she played a leading role in the Zionist enterprise, and she also won the Israel Prize. So in post-war Italy, she led the activity of the Aliyah Bet, first with the Ehud Haradi, and in the last phase of the Aliyah Bet, she was alone leading the Aliyah Bet. And she negotiated with the Italian authorities the permit to let the ship leave from the Italian coast. However, on a personal note, her figure struck me not only for her ability to run the underground activities of the Aliyah Bet, but also for her empathy toward the refugees. Her mission with the Mossad Lealia Bet was extremely important. It was a political mission, but she was able to recognize also the feelings of the refugees, the demoralization of the refugees, which was generated by the long waiting time spent in the refugee camps. So she was a political and pragmatic woman, but also really empathetic with the refugees.
That's beautiful. Thank you. That's a great way to round out this story. But at the New Books Network, we don't like to leave it with that. We like to know what you're working on next. So you gave us a little taste when you told us that about your new prod, that you're a project leader, but tell us a little bit about your new project, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I'm happy to share with you that I'm working at Fondazione CEDEC, CEDEC Foundation in Milan, which is the Italian institution specialized in contemporary Jewish history. And there I'm leading a project which is entitled Tracing Roots and Memories, Entangled Jewish Experiences Across the Mediterranean. So I'm working in collaboration with archivists and digital humanists and other volunteers. We are working on a new collection of oral testimonies of Jews migrated to Italy in the post-colonial era from North Africa and Middle East, mainly Libya, Egypt, Tunisia, Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon. So together we are working to shape this collection as a proper archival collection and to share these stories of migration through digital storytelling and interactive map. So our goal is to preserve the cultural heritage of these communities, the memories of this community, and documenting how this memory evolve through mobility, through resettlement, and through the encounter with Italian society and also Italian Jews.
Thank you. We definitely look forward to that. And there's nothing online yet, right?
Not yet. Hopefully soon.
So we definitely look forward to hearing about it and seeing it. Thank you again. And for all of you listeners, we have been speaking with Dr. Chiara Renzo about her book, Jewish Displaced Persons in Italy, 1943 to 1951, Politics, Rehabilitation, Identity, published by Routledge Press in August 2023. It has really been a pleasure.
Thank you. For me, the same.
Thank you. And for continuing to explore the diversity of the Jewish people, follow Unity Through Diversity on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, and our podcast, Reclaiming Identity.